Welcome to Engineering Innovations, the official podcast of Purdue University's Elmore Family School of Electrical and Computer Engineering, where we explore the cutting-edge research and innovations shaping our future. I'm your host, Kristen Malavenda, the Communications Director for the school, and today we're diving into a fascinating area of technology that's making waves, flexible and stretchable electronics. And my guest today is Dr. Muhammad Hussein. He's a professor of ECE here at Purdue University, and his work is transforming the way we think about electronics, taking them from the rigid circuits that we know to materials that can bend, stretch, and even conform to our bodies. We'll be discussing how his research is paving the way for a new era of smart, wearable technologies, and much more. Muhammad, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Christine.
So let's start with, before we get into your research, what was your path to becoming an engineer?
I think if I were not institutionally trained, I would still have been ended up as an engineer because I essentially keep asking myself about two things, like why and why not. And these two questions that actually drive me to my philosophy in my life, and which is why I do what I do. And that naturally ends up being an engineer.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Well, how did you end up in electrical computer engineering and this particular area of research?
Oh, that's an interesting, the history, because I wanted to be an astronaut.
Okay.
And at some point, I realized that my chances were diminishing. So what happened is I was born in Bangladesh. I did my bachelor's there. And then I came to USC, Los Angeles, for my master's back in 2001. And I joined spring semester. So one Friday afternoon, April, I was in front of a small lab with the window door. When I looked through, I figured out that, there are students who are wearing bunny suits carrying the wafer. And it fascinated me. I started asking around, and they realized that it's actually a course offered by my department there in electrical engineering. And I decided to take, register for that course, and that course was on semiconductor fabrication.
Okay.
And that bunny suit actually, that I wore, that that made me so happy because it's I was an astronaut.
Right.
And then I kind of never gave up on that bunny suit.
Just not taking it to the moon.
But what we make that actually goes to the moon and will go to the Mars and beyond.
Excellent. So now that we're on to it, can you give a brief overview of your research and also just what sparked your interest in flexible and stretchable electronics?
So essentially, when I was doing my PhD, because of that bunny suit, my love for fab work, I spent a record amount of 10,000 hours in 3 years,
wow.
Which actually equates to 10 hours every day inside the clean room. So I kind of was a fab rat and still something like that. So I used to make electronics. And at
right.
that point, we went through, I was very fortunate because we went through the major transition for the semiconductor industry as per Gordon Moore, who was the co-founder of Intel.
Okay.
So what happened is we were actually looking to for solutions which we can make our transistors, our tiny devices in a completely different way. So I got involved in that. And I continued that. I joined TI and I continued as a program manager of Sematech. So at that point, we used to make, and as of today, all the electronics, as you can see, they are kind of rigid.
Yes.
Okay. But, I could feel that when you look at the nature, we get our inspiration from nature. Nature has many things which are rigid, rock. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But you won't find so easily a flat surface.
Right.
Right? So these are actually very good for flat surface. So if there is a way that we can make them flexible, like paper,
mm-hmm.
right? Then that would be great.
Right.
And there was already work going on and it's still continuing, material based, which are naturally flexible and stretchable. But the challenge is that stopped being the flexible hybrid electrons, means that they still continue to use these rigid like, you know, the packaged
circuitries. Yeah, like the traditional chip that we think about.
Yes, with some of the flexible components.
Okay.
I actually decided, no, we can go beyond that and make everything flexible. So, like, including this, right? And without compromising on the performance, energy efficiency, integration density, everything. And that actually brought me here to pursue this kind of research.
So for people who are listening who aren't familiar with this, like, what are some of the potential applications of your research that we would, everyday person would know about?
So there are two things. One is the curiosity-driven, so which actually we would like to have more intimate interfacing with nature so that we can understand what's going on. That takes it to the level of wearable is one example, but definitely implantable also, right? As an example is like, you know, the as a personal, like, you know, that someone can have kidney stone. Recurring event. And you know how painful it can be. But if there is a way that we actually could get an early indication and we can take measure on that, that's a fantastic thing.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, you know, that. So there, that's just an example of that. You go to, like, you know, the, as you know, that our oceans or, like, you know, the marine environments are getting polluted, and that's actually harmful for our marine species and the marine resources. So we tagged them. It's called bluefin. And back in 2020, the world's largest consumer electronics show in Las Vegas, CES, we were actually awarded the best innovation award. That's the, as of today, the only academic group.
Nice.
Right, like, you know, that. So I think the possibilities are immense.
So looking at the next 5 to 10 years and even beyond, what is the next big step and how are you going to get there?
I think one of the things is, like, you know, that we also need to know about the fundamentals. So what's going on in the industry? And I always like love to keep it up with that one because I was trained in the industry. And, like, you know, the, when I joined Purdue 2 years back, like, you know, the, I immediately restarted the course, which was in hiatus for 7 years, like, you know, the, on semiconductor fabrication. So the industry is moving toward, like, you know, the vertical stacking, which we started many years back as a research group. And, like, you know, the, so what we are doing is, like, you know, the, that actually enables us to bring, like, you know, the heterogeneous material sets. So it's a part of the heterogeneous integration. So the question is that how we can actually translate that also in flexible and stretchable and shape reconfigurable format. Okay. And today, as we say, that still that flexible hybrid electronics is actually using those rigid chips. Instead of that, if we can actually get to the point where all our electronic components are completely flexible or those kind of things, like, you know, that's going to be fantastic. But it is a very hard, steep, like, you know, the path.
Yeah. What's the challenges of going from a hard traditional chip to a flexible one?
Mechanical reliability. And while retaining all the electrical and optical and magnetic and properties, and then try to get closer to the biological properties.
Gotcha. So when you're in the lab working on this stuff, I know you have students that work with you. First of all, what qualities do you look for in a student that you say this person's going to be a good engineer and good for my research?
Passion.
Okay.
And I think, like, you know, that I do believe as an educator, and I actually take my education side, like, you know, the as a way to essentially every single of my classroom or course, I find it as an opportunity to enrich mutually because I consider that as a platform to share our experiences, our backgrounds, and our, like, you know, the interests. So what happens is, like, you know, the, because you see that when a student comes, I came here from Berkeley. A student, when they are admitted in Berkeley or Purdue or, like, you know, UT Austin, where I did my PhD, or USC, pretty much, like, and many other schools, maybe I'm not, like, you know, the, giving the laundry list. But the point is, like, you know, that they've already proven themselves.
Right.
All I need to know about where they're going to excel, and people are going to always excel when they can chase their own passion. So I, just as an observer, like, you know, I keep looking at, like, you know, where my students are doing. Well, someone is very good with testing. Someone is very good in hands work in fabrication. Someone is very good with programming. So I try to basically, like, you know, encourage them and bring the projects to them and mold it in a way so that they can excel. And you know, I keep saying, you give your heart, and like, you know, we are going to make it happen.
Yeah. So a lot of times, I especially notice with our engineering students, they get very frustrated if they hit a roadblock. And how do you teach your students how to navigate around challenges?
Because I always tell them that two things. One is that, you know, how we define efficiency and productivity. So I say that, you know, every second, our world around us, you know, presents us with a situation, okay? And how quickly we understand what is required from us, or how we can actually, like, you know, break the barrier, that's efficiency. And how quickly we reach there is productivity. That depends on resources and so on and so forth. But when we understand that part, right, like, you know, I tell them there's nothing called silver bullet. Mm-hmm. If you fail today, that means that someone will one day may overcome, or people will know that this is not the right path.
Right. So you're learning something even when it doesn't
exactly
work out.
So I keep, like, you know, inspiring them, like, you know, that. And I always, like, you know, I even go to, like, you know, to the fab or places, like, you know, that. So when they get tired, right, like, you know, they have at least a shoulder to lean on. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, you know, that human aspect of, like, you know, so that completely diminishes that, like, you know, barrier between the faculty students. It's rather like, you know, they're going to be my colleague.
Right.
Just soon enough.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they will be the university president. They will be one day the, you know, that leaders, industry thought leaders, right? Like, you know, so there is no way I can actually, like, you know, just neglect them, or, like, you know, denigrate them.
I think it goes along against some of the stereotypes of engineers, too, where people think it's very cut and dry, and some people don't understand how exciting it is, and the view of an engineer is someone who can't interact socially.
I think, like, you know, that then actually that leads us to a point is, like, you know, that we get Doctor of Philosophy in many of these schools. So of course, MIT gives, like, you know, Doctor of Science, and some other schools are coming forward. The question is that, you know, I keep asking many people, and then, like, you know, just give them a shockwave. I say that, you know, that you did your PhD in an engineering topic, but why you are getting a degree which is called Doctor of Philosophy? What is your philosophy? Then many people actually, as if, like, you know, what is he asking? I think the question is there, right? That our job as academics is essentially to pursue, like, you know, that enigmatic stuff. So we pursue things which is going to be, like, you know, potentially make a change, you know, that elevate our quality of our life. And then we, in an unbiased manner, we present it to the society, and they are going to make a choice, right? So, and that aspect is also, like, you know, that when we think about as an educator, it's our job is also as an engineer to simplify complex things. Mm-hmm. When we basically say that, no, this is for my Friday afternoon, my small group of peers, I think we get lost. And I always, if I have an idea, there was a time 10 years back, I used to actually talk to my mom and my daughters.
Oh, okay.
Because the daughters, they were under 10, and my mom, she became just 70 plus. Mm-hmm. So if they could understand in a minute of my discussion what I'm trying to do, I know that it's going to be something useful.
Absolutely. That's a great way to go about it. We mentioned a little bit earlier, touched on semiconductors. And another thing that you do is you do some important work in helping students develop tech skills. So I'm really talking about the Purdue Summer Training Awareness and Readiness for Semiconductors program. It's called STARS. So tell me about that program and the need for the effort.
Yeah. So as you know, like, you know, that USA, as a country, our country, we actually, you know, contribute in the global ecosystem of electronics and associated computing, internet, and everything, more than 85%. But unfortunately, from the physical hardware perspective, we only produce 12%. Okay? So that means that increasingly we are not capable of making anything on our own. So I throw a challenge, and that challenge is, in the next 5 years, can we make an iPhone or similar device, everything in USA?
Okay.
Or can we make a Tesla or a similar car or that kind of vehicle, like, you know, that in 10 years from today in the USA.
Right. Be self-reliant.
And other countries can do the same. It's not, there is no, and we can have our allies, we can have competition, it's fine. The point is that we need to have those kind of skills. It's like, you know, today, every single student that comes to a campus for their college education, they know a programming language.
Right.
But we do use the electronics, we just don't know what it is. So when I came here immediately, like, you know, I started, like, you know, the looking around. And this is not something the first time I've done it in Berkeley. I've done it in Coast and other places that, like, you know, the, so what we did, we immediately actually, we started the graduate course today, this semester, just to let you know, we have 90 students. We can't take any more, right? Okay. Like, you know, that. So that's one. Second, we started, like, you know, I said that there are four E's, so which is essentially, like, you know, engage, excite, empower, and enrich our students. So we started a seminar course, which is called Chips Changing the World, and which actually for the beginning year students, they come and we start inviting the industry folks, like, you know, to give four answers. What is your premium semiconducting product? What is the role of semiconductor there? How is your upbringing within the semiconductor ecosystem? And what is your take-home message for these students, right? And guess what? In the first year when we did that, back in 2023 spring, like, you know, after the course ended, 85% of the students, they decided and they said, we would like to pursue or we would like to know more about semiconductor. So we were upfront. So I said that, like, you know, not only we offered the course, and back in 2022, fall semester when I came, I said that we need to actually empower them, right? Okay, so let's offer a summer program, right? It was just like, oh, no. I said, like, no, we have to do it. Just let's do it. And I am pretty good with, like, you know, coming up with names because I love naming things. So it starts came from there. And Professor Landstrom, like, you know, that he and I actually said, like, you know, we have to go. We're going to go. We are Boilermakers. I would say, by the way, let's change our name to Chipmakers.
Okay. There you go.
So we launched that program and the industry came forward. And we basically trained the 72 students, okay? Manufacturing and design track. Guess what happened? Every single one of them, they got summer internship. So we basically pulled it forward. Yep. They didn't need to wait, right?
Right.
And then I launched the VICTORS program, the Veterans Inclusion and Competency Towards Semiconductors, bringing the local veterans. We designed the course and we did the workshop for the high schooler students, six counties. We Intel came forward. We launched the course, Semiconductor Manufacturing 101, which today in 10 months has 10,000 learners globally. Synopsys has came forward. So we are going to actually do a new course on Semiconductor Design 101. And we are designing now the mobile fab for my last 18 months stealth project. So this fab will go an 18-wheeler from rural town to town, city to city. And we are taking fab to the kitchen room.
Nice. Nice. It sounds exciting. See, the way that you describe it, if I was in your class too, I would get excited about it because your excitement is contagious. For anybody who maybe, I don't know, doesn't know the word semiconductor or doesn't know the importance of semiconductors, can you explain that?
Yeah, very simple. Okay, so, you know, that we are very familiar with electricity, right? So wires are bringing electricity to us. So any material that actually help to conduct electricity, that's conductor.
Okay.
Okay? The one that restricts that kind of movement, that's insulator, like a rubber sole, like, you know, the shoes. And in between there is semiconductor, where it will conduct and it may not conduct. But we do have a way so that we can actually manage that.
Okay.
And that makes it semiconductor. And silicon today is the best semiconductor material that we know. Not because it's best, but it is an optimal solution. In engineering, we always work with optimal solution.
And so are people trying to develop even better things than silicon?
Well, that kind of pursuit will always go. You know that in science, I always say that there is nothing absolute truth in science. What it means is today with the existing resources, both the physical, the human brain, our knowledge, what we explain today, 100 years from like, you know, today, it might be completely different way explanation. Today's explanation is not wrong. It's just an evolving the condition.
Right.
So there will always be pursuit of new materials. But I would say one thing, though, that in engineering, if we have something which has 5 advantages and 2 disadvantages, we must have to make sure that these 5 advantages are always met.
Okay.
Neck to neck.
Mm-hmm.
Then either we are having, like, you know, the one of these disadvantages going away, or both, or ideally going away both, and these 5 become 7 advantages.
Okay.
But if we can't meet these 5 advantages, then it's a cool science. But to be an engineered solution, that's a long, you know, arduous path.
Right. We talk a lot about energy efficiency when we talk about these things, too. What's the importance of energy efficiency?
I think, like, you know, the increasingly the way that the number of electronics, like, you know, the computing, the data, that's like, you know, the usage that's increasing. So that's actually comes with, like, you know, these hardwares, they need to be powered up. Okay. And that's why the energy efficiency is very important, because who is going to supply the energy? If you look at the solar cells, these are great renewable energy, but it has certain challenges. Can we make a solar cell which will be, like, you know, the lighting us up when it's dark? Nope, not yet.
Right.
Okay, how can we take them through the grid system? The reason that fossil fuel are so popular, because in a bottle of Coke, like, you know, in a Coke bottle, we can take some, like, you know, the fossil fuel, and it has the highest energy content, right? Maybe it's not competing with nuclear, but that's not something we are carrying.
Right.
So the question is that, like, you know, that we want things to be energy efficient. 2 ways. One, increase the supply, but that means that our battery needs to be, like, you know, the making with, it's volumetric today, it's too heavy, too big.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to basically challenge and change the status quo. And we have to reduce the energy consumption. And that's where we need to get an inspiration, nature. So we consume only 20 watts. And think about how, like, you know, the how our brain can think.
Yeah. Well, also a big part of this, I imagine, is interdisciplinary research.
Yes.
How important is that? And what are the areas or the fields of study that you're most likely to work with on these problems?
Yeah, I would always say, like, you know, that everything that I learned during my middle school and high school, I find them, they are the most handy, you know, math, physics, chemistry, mm-hmm. biology.
Yeah.
Okay. That's number one. But I think their evolution, their advanced level is any kind of fundamental science. Like, you know, when we look at the physics, chemistry, or we look at the material science, they're all important. Chemical engineering is very important for processes. Computer science is very important for data analysis. Like, you know, that electrical engineering is very important for designing the devices. Mechanical engineering is very important for our, like, you know, the equipment sets. Civil engineering is very important to make things sustainable,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, I offer a course for just the beginning year students. It's called that Engineering Innovates, right?
Okay.
And I, every day, so I just teach this course, like, you know, for 5 weeks, 3 days, 15 classes, 12 classes, I introduce 12 engineering disciplines with what happened in the past and what is the next big marvel.
Okay.
Okay. So that actually helps them. Like, you know, to eventually to get interested about a new, like, you know, that, okay, I want to check out nuclear engineering. I
right.
want to check out the aeronautical engineering. I'm not an aeronautical engineer. I wanted to be an astronaut. But I think that point, I just would like to bring it to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So you obviously spend a lot of time on your research because you love it, but there are times maybe where you need a break. What kind of things do you do in your free time to recharge or just have fun?
2 things I do. You know, every year I have an objective that, like, you know, it's a bigger objective. And the other one is, like, you know, my daily ritual. So, you know, I'm a pretty decent cook. Okay, I do a lot of gardening. I sleep. I spend a lot of time on streaming media, mm-hmm. like, you know, and in the online social media, no matter whatever people say. Obviously, when I'm in the driving, like, you know, I have music.
Yep.
I watch occasionally the movies, right? Like, you know, and I maintain, like, you know, a really good and continuous sustained relationship with my families, friends. There is not a single day I didn't talk to my mom. since I left home back in 2000, 31st December.
Wow.
Or like, you know, the many of my friends, colleagues, like, you know, I keep relationship. But there's a bigger objective that I do. What it means is like, you know, that this year, Bangladesh, my where I was born, has gone through a major change. Our youth, they have come forward. We went through a political uprising, which was very important for our country. We came out of a fascism, so period. But the question is that we would like to see it rebuilt. So how we can essentially help, right? Like, you know, that, like, you know, the technological innovation, all these kids, like, you know, that they do robotics and so on and so forth. So I actually engage with them and organize competition, like, you know, the write to them, talk to them to basically nurture them. Next year, I will do something else.
That's really interesting that you kind of approach everything in your life from an engineering perspective and you're engineering your goals, basically. So I know one other thing you do is you have a podcast of your own. So tell everybody about what that podcast is and what you do on it.
Okay. So what happened is during the time of pandemic, I was in Berkeley, 2020, and the nature became so beautiful at everything because we were not outside, right? Okay. So at that point, I was just thinking like, you know, that, you know, many of our, like, you know, the legendary figures in electronic devices, they were retiring. But we do know about, like, you know, we have seen them as, like, you know, giving talks, like, you know, again, cut and dry, right?
Right.
Okay. So I actually thought, like, you know, that we would like to know about these people, like, you know, as a human.
Right.
Okay. So I just came to my mind, and this is who I am all the time from my childhood. I actually put together I kind of know about, like, you know, what people might be looking for. I'm very much involved with the Electron Devices Society, IEEE's. So their board of governors, that was a virtual conference, like, you know, that I presented that.
Okay.
I'm very fortunate, like, you know, that they said, oh, yeah, go ahead. Do you have the questions? I said, yeah, I do have the questions. I would like you to volunteer the questions, then I will show mine. And it matched, right? You know, they're empowered. So then we launched. And we have a list, and Professor Chin Ming Hu, who is can be considered as the father of modern semiconductor devices of UC Berkeley. So he said, yeah, I will do it. Professor Lundstrom did it, right? Like, you know, the NanoHub is kind of his brainchild. Like, you know, the so many of, like, you know, as of today, we have done 29.
Oh, wow.
My next are going to be, I have done with Professor Ashraful Alam. I will be doing for Shupriya. And Saif Salahuddin, who was Shupriya's student, but now he is in Berkeley and a very famous professor. So, like, you know, that I do have a plan for them. Kaushik Roy, right? Like, you know, that. Yeah.
Well, there's so many people just in Purdue ECE.
Exactly.
You could have endless podcast episodes about it. Well, thank you so much for joining me today and talking about semiconductors and flexible electronics. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
I hope you've enjoyed learning about the fascinating world of flexible and stretchable electronics and semiconductors with Dr. Mohammad Hussain from Purdue University. It's really incredible to think about how this technology could soon be integrated into our daily lives, from health monitoring wearables to smart clothing, even beyond that. Thanks so much again for listening. If you found this conversation as interesting as I did, be sure to subscribe, leave us a review, and share this episode with others who might be interested in the future of technology. And to stay updated on upcoming episodes and to explore more about Purdue ECE, you can visit our website at purdue.edu/ECE. You can follow us on all the socials, Facebook, X, Instagram, LinkedIn. You can check the show notes for links and more information about that. And we'll be back in another month with a new episode.